You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
Making waves.
Welcome to Making Waves, the Ship Rock Podcast, part of the Sound Talent Media family and one of the fastest growing rock music podcasts in the world. We want to thank you so much for joining us and showing your support. So every time you can, please remember to review, rate, subscribe, and share our podcast. And let's get the word out. With that said, let's welcome tonight. This is a really interesting podcast. We were just before we went live here, we were talking about the idea of production in the live music space and the live event space. So with that said, I want to welcome Kyle Connors and Tim Grabral from Cruise Production. Thank you, gentlemen, for joining us.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Yeah, Cruise Production, the guys, if you don't know, is basically, I guess I'll let them explain it better, but for Shiprock's purposes and Motorhead and Ship Hop, we've used them. They are basically the guys that put all the stages together, make sure everything sounds good and looks good and shine really well under the bright lights. So we want to thank them. And with that said, we're gonna get to our discussion with them. And Chad, what have you got for the gentleman to begin the process here?
I want to ask one very specific question. What do you think got you excited enough in audio, in the audio world, to then take all of your shit and your life and put it on a cruise ships multiple times throughout the year? Like, where did you go wrong? Like, what happened in your life where you're like, you said, fuck it, put it in a suitcase, let's go. Kyle, want to start?
No, I'm going to let Tim start because he's right, kind of the key to the whole thing.
Well, I hate to turn your question around, but for me, it was actually backwards. I started with ships and then went into audio.
Oh, man. That hurts me, but feels good at the same time, you know?
Yeah, so that's how I got involved.
Interesting.
Mine was the opposite because I was doing audio and doing production work. And then whenever Tim's business grew, I kind of came in as the technical person to start. And then we got too many ships and then we kind of split off. And then we've been doing everything everywhere, all over the country and all over the world. So it's been quite a wild ride. So we're kind of opposite in how we got here.
Yeah. How many ships are you doing right now? Like on a normal year, I should say.
A normal year, what we'd say, Kyle, about between 10 and 14 is a good average.
Yeah, we had 1 year, I think it was 2017. I think we had like 25. It was something ridiculous. And then now we're in the teens for sure. Yeah.
So how much of that year, I'm just doing quick math, I'm assuming that all the ships are at least 3 to 5 days long, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so 3, 5, 7, and 8 usually.
Okay, so you're talking like at least a fourth of the year, if not half of the year.
Yeah, and you got to factor in too, a lot of the cruises we do it, you know, we refer to it as pre-cruise. So we sail the cruise prior as well. Sometimes we have programs that are back-to-back on the same ship. We just, you know, change around the theming of it all. But for the most part, yeah, it's a good 3 to 4 months solid out at sea. And its season usually starts early fall and goes all the way into late spring, early summer. So we do have kind of the summertime and the early fall to kind of reset, rest, and prepare for the next season.
What's your favorite ship, like cruise, to do?
Kyle, you go ahead and do that. Kyle's just an obvious one, so go ahead.
Are you talking favorite charter or favorite ship?
Favorite experience, I'm assuming that you're probably doing a lot of event-based things as well.
Yeah, I mean, mine has always been, the motorboat one was my favorite one. I was, you know, that was my thing. So I guess now Shiprock would be that because I'm a Metallica Slayer kind of guy. That's kind of my thing. So for me, that was fantastic. And for 2 years in a row, we did the Motorhead one. Shiprock fits me well too. It's just it's one of the real heavy metal ones that we do, the hard rock ones that we do. The other rock ones that we do are kind of more classic rock 70s. And that's great too. I get to see a lot of stuff that I grew up listening to on the radio all my life. So Shiprock would be it for me now for the current setup.
You know, Tim, you mentioned that you came actually, you were on prior doing ships prior to getting into the production side of things. And Kyle, you came from more of a, I guess, a studio setting.
I was doing studio and live audio, and then he brought me into him.
So let me ask you this. I mean, I was going to kind of do the comparison between doing land-based, which I'm sure you guys already had your hand in too, but what are some of there's so many major hurdles we all know from doing this on a ship, but what's the number one thing you guys always concern yourself with when let's say pre-production, Tim, as you mentioned, starts, what's the number one concern you have?
The pre-production side of it, the biggest concerns we have that's unique to any land-based event is the day of loading. Is all the paperwork correct? Are the trucks all there? Are the trucks all clear to come in? Has the crew been cleared? And all of those things. Everything leads up to that. That's where it kind of splits off from where land-based and ship-based productions are, because we also now have the element of customs. You know, you take a tour from one U.S. city to the next, there's no issue with customs. You go over the Canadian border, there's an issue with the border. But here we deal with issues that could basically make or break an event and the cruise within a 2-hour window. So all of our paperwork, all of our documentation, all of our clearance docs really have to be precise in order to get that clearance from the U.S. Customs to get us on board. So that's where our biggest worry always is.
So more of an administrative than the actual physical act of building these stages and setting everything up then, right?
Right. Once you have that clearance, then the physical hard labor really starts. Like everybody knows, you know, Kyle and I, you know, just as much as anybody else, that hard labor starts the minute that first, you know, case hits the ship. And then it's nonstop for 4, 5, 7 days, 14 days. Our record right now is we did 25 days straight on 4 different charters. And that basically is a nonstop pace. But working up to it, it's mostly, you know, documentation and riders and standard production for the most part. But once that first case hits that gangway, it's full on.
The sexy elements of the business.
Yes.
One thing I want to ask you, and I think Chad can definitely attest to it, but we've both been doing this now long enough to see how you guys figure things out. But when I first ever came on the cruise, not so much the half charter ones we had things figured out there, but when you guys did the full charter for us, I remember looking at that pool going, how in the fuck did they get the stage above that? How did you guys look at that and go, yep, got the vision right here? Or did it just what you basically left with, hey, this is the only option we have. We have to make this work, and we're going to have to basically take away this element that cruisers generally care about, the largest pool on the boat. But on obviously shipwreck, they could care less if they're swimming in a not swimming, whatever. But seriously, I'm always amazed. What was your first reaction when you guys first started doing this, going, how are we going to navigate this goddamn pool here?
Well, it's funny because the very first charters that we worked on in the early years, even before cruise production started, when I was working before with Carnival, where I first met Alan, a lot of the stages were already part of the ship's construction. So you didn't need to add to it. Once the full scale production like Shiprocked and others, you needed that stage. We were really given a problem to solve. Mm-hmm. Saying, you know, we have a bigger stage, we have a bigger band, we have one headliner that's coming on for the day, will not perform, you know, unless the stage is XY, then that's what we have. So we're really faced with a challenge, and we have a lot of great vendors that we work with that really step up to that. And so those are planned usually a year, sometimes 2 years in advance with the math, getting the insurance coverage, getting the ship to sign off on it, which is always a challenge. So this way here, a lot of that work is done. And once you're there, it's very hard to change something on site. But those big stages like you guys have taken years in the making to design and to get just right.
I was wondering, real quick, before I get back to Chad, I was curious about that. And it's something we always think about is like when people hear we're doing an event, they don't realize that it's an 11th month process to make that event happen in every way, way, shape, or form for us. Now, I can imagine what you guys have to go through as far as doing all the production side of things, because of the safety issues and OSHA and everything else, it's just so much different than everything in front of house.
Yeah, no, for sure. And then, you know, one of the biggest comparisons to a land-based event is the fact that once you put a road case somewhere on stage, you never have to worry about it. Here, we just can't leave things just out in the open. You know, as soon as you set sail at 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock, everything has to be locked down. You know, and also too, we're not building necessarily a stage in a cruise ship. We're building a stage that's sometimes 10 stories above, you know, sea level. And then we're adding another three more stories high on top of that. And then you have a small window to build it, and you have to build it exactly to spec, or, you know, or the ship doesn't sail. So as you know, we've had a very good record with this, and knock on wood, we'll continue on. But that's where the challenges are really different between land-based and cruise ships. Things don't move on you at the, you know, BB&T Center here in Fort Lauderdale.
When you start putting stuff into stories, like one story, two, three story, it gets very daunting, and that's actually frightening to think about.
Yeah.
So, like, with all that being said, I have to ask this because I think that, like, any musician dude who's listening is probably going to ask. Think about this. Is there any, like, absolute fucking horror story? Like, you know, like, you don't get your rider filled, right? You know, like, if you're, I'm just going to use Five Finger Death Punch, right? And when I'm saying your Sound and Lights rider, like, the stage is your stage. You're putting everything in there that you think that you're going to need and what as powerful and as much production as possible. But, like, you're not looking at the headliners, rider, right? And, like, piecing everything together from there. Or are you?
We are, to the sense that we want the show to go off as, you know, as what the guests expect to see and then some. The only real hard line is probably like pyrotechnics.
Yeah.
Some cruise lines allow them inside. Some cruise lines allow them outside. We've done it before. But that's probably that hard wall that's it's tough to get over. Everything else, I mean, Kyle, if I forget something, let me know. Everything from, you know, biodegradable streamer cannons, cryo cannons, you know, full scale, you know, multi-head laser systems over the pool, multi-level lighting systems, spotlight, all of those things we can accommodate. But for the most part, it's requested. And also, too, it's up to the promoter. You know, if they want to add the extra cost, additional cost, I mean, we face that every day is, yeah, we can do full scale, you know, laser display, but it's going to be X amount of dollars. Well, then that answered that question. No lasers.
There's so many other, like, other factors from it being a ship standpoint, such as sometimes we can't have certain lights going out over the sides of the ship because it looks like an SOS signal to another ship. So we have to pick the right lights in the right direction. They can't just go over they want. So sometimes we got an LD out there from a band just, you know, and it's like, yo, you need to bring it down, needs to come in. Not only that, but it could also be something as simple as certain foods we can't bring onto a ship and bring to another country.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Potentially. So hummus. Sometimes some of those things can't be, you know, hummus, so, like livestock kinds of things. I can't bring meat onto a ship and give you whatever you know, we have to, there are some binding things that the ship really restricts us with. But then there's a lot of things that we can do that nobody else can do because we're out in the middle of the ocean and it's a whole different experience.
Yeah.
Do you
like now when you're drum?
There you go. What when you guys run into these acts? You know, they obviously they want their show. Obviously, but are they also under the? Well, they know that basically they have to cut back on some of the show because of the limitations of being on, basically a flotilla.
We've actually been very fortunate because you know we've worked with a wide variety of artists. You know, from A-list artists and, you know, in the soul music and R&B and country and rock. And we usually go at it in such a way that we review the rider and very rarely do we have to say something that they're not able to do, you know, whether it's LED walls or teleprompters or, you know, when it comes down to specialty backline equipment. Very rarely do we have to tell an artist, you can't have this. It really works to our advantage because we never have that awkward conversations with an artist that you can't have X, Y, and Z. Mm-hmm. Really, the only limitation sometimes is the physical side. You know, like we had the Jacksons on 2 years ago, and they're just a full-scale production. Kind of like, you know, Casey and the Sunshine Band. It's 16, 18 members. So that's where it becomes an issue. But they know they're, you know, they're working on a ship, so they do accommodate for that. But really, that's the only roadblock we hit with artists is those full-scale performances that have just take up so much physical space.
don't have to name any names, obviously, if you want to, great. But in the effort to like understand, like, where does the buck kind of like, you know, if somebody come to you and said, like, listen, this is it, or we're not doing the ship. Have you had any of those like asshole situations where they just don't understand the dynamics and environment that they're going into, and you simply have to piss somebody off?
No, I mean, without naming names, you know, we work with a lot of different, you know, clients, you know, like Alan, I've actually worked with one of the longest folks I've worked with. And you don't really get the high demands, but what you get is the last minute, we got to have it.
Very right.
You know, they went to a hotel, they saw in the ballroom, they had this giant whatever, and you know, they got to have it, and they can't. You get those dramatic, you know, situations. You know, we were in a situation without naming names. We had to build an entire three-dimensional set piece in 6 days, matching off a children's toy that was made in the 80s.
Okay.
So we literally had no time, and we did it. We pulled it off. We were kind of both, Kyle and I, stepped way out of our comfort zone, and you know, spray painted away. But usually, that's where we need to have it, or the last minute, spur of the moment, these, you know, kind of last ditch effort to make something incredible. But it's usually we get involved when there's a chance of we're not going to do it without this. We get involved well in advance and kind of smooth all that out before it gets to the point where, you know, like Alan could advertise the lineup. You know, we have all that, the bigger issues kind of straightened out already.
Yeah.
Can I ask something on the reverse of what Chaz said? Is there any times when you run to a band who's usually known for a production type of situation that says, you know what, we're going to strip it down. We're just going to make this about the music. And that's okay. We can just use a back line, some lights, maybe some haze. We're good with that. Ever run into that? I got it. Big zero. Sorry. No. No, sorry. Yeah. Hey, man, I was just thinking about, hey, we started this band in the fucking garage. We can do that again.
No, I mean, there's some people that surprise you, right? I mean, they surprise you with what your expectation is and how their level of like, yeah, whatever you guys have is fine. You know, and you sometimes that is so off balance between the artist and what they want.
Right, right.
And then on the reverse side of that, you have, don't worry, we're really easy to work with.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, you know, right away, that's not going to be the case.
Nobody
that is a guaranteed,
that.
Here we go, you're not going to be easy to work with.
Most of these times, too, it seems like it's not what I would, not baby acts or something of that nature on a true opening act that a lot of people haven't heard of. It's kind of like those bands that are in the middle, not necessarily the headliner. Those are often the ones who are needy, let's say, or won't play without XYZ. I haven't had any issues with headliners on like Shiprock and stuff like that. It's not, it really hasn't been that way. I often find that it's the ones that are a little bit newer that are more of a pain than the ones that have been around and had to play in big and small places all their lives. And they can play anywhere, you know?
I also think that there's something to be said, like I'm the headliner. And to be honest with you, this is like, this is a cakewalk for me.
Yeah.
You know, I'm, yeah. And the middle guys are like, we got something to prove and we want these people to leave this ship. You know, like it's a different vibe. And even in that realm, it's like, I think they forget, you know, like a band forgets, like, this is a fucking vacation and like your music is going to do it. And it doesn't matter if you have a laser light show on a boat, no one's going to leave that boat like they would in a physical, like on the land venue and be like, I'm going to that next laser light show or whatever it is. You know, they're going to the boat, whether you're there or not.
You know, Chad, you're exactly right. They're not worrying about your lasers or your blown up demons or werewolves that you have on stage. I mean, like, they worry about your songs and whether you're nice to them at meet and greet. That's all they want to go away with. Yep. So if you do that, you're a winner. That's as simple as that. I mean, that's why we love bands like Seven Dust. Plug in and go. You know, they've got a few things here and there, but plug in and go. Then the nicest guys in the world, that's why they always come back, because
they're always walking around the ship.
That's what they want. But we do understand those bands that need their thing. And that's part of who they are. That's part of the charm of them being a pain in the ass sometimes too. Like, you know, you're a pain in the ass, but we love you.
I got one more selfish question and then I'm going to let you guys get into the nitty gritty. Is there ever been like and obviously, I've done, not this will be my...
Is Chad ever been problematic? Is Wilson?
Yeah. Let me ask you a serious. I've been waiting all year to ask you. But
I was told to say no.
Okay, thank
right.
Thank you.
That's what my
there's somebody
say.
With a gun right here that you can't
Jed
see.
Jed starts talking about himself. Divert. So my actual question would be, and I've never on those stages ever felt unsafe. Like there could be an incident or whatever. But you're talking about a bunch of drunk people, very tight, close places. You know, they're all over the stage, and on top of that, you have the environment against you. Have you ever had a wow, holy shit, that was almost a mishap or a mishap? Anything crazy happen out there in the production world that like nobody really knows about?
Nope, nothing. Never anything.
That's perfect. I can't think of one, honestly.
Yeah, I knew.
Let me read my legal disclaimer. Give me 1 minute.
Yeah.
Really? So I mean, it's great. Like you even had like rest in peace, a Radiohead stage incident.
No, maybe more of like on the loading and unloading process and things that we can't totally control. There's a lot of craning. There's a lot of forklifts. There's a lot of stuff like that. A lot of ways for people to get injured. But we had never had a mishap in the sense of like a fallen stage or somebody fell off of X or Y. I've never run into that. It's more of that just, you know, in Miami in an old dock, there's a lot of rusty things and the forklifts are going fast. Accidents happen. I've seen people get hurt, not our guys, but I've seen it, you know? So that's probably the closest to like a real mishap, if you want to call it that I've seen, but it's kind of more of a could happen to anybody situation. If you're on the dock side of the loading dock of the cargo part of a ship, you know?
You know, I'm always impressed just as someone who's viewing some of the stuff that goes on while we have inclement weather and you guys are able to take a deck show and scoot it into the theater pretty quick. The turnaround is fantastic. And I know that's a scheduling thing and it just pushes everything, but still I'm always just amazed that it's able to work in that manner. So basically it almost felt like the band was going to be playing here anyway.
Yeah.
That's the one situation we did have once where we could see it coming was we were sailing back on one of our charters coming back and we knew the weather was going to be bad. The ship was trying to avoid it. And the message came down to say, no, we can't. And so finally, once the decision was made, we cleared the deck, you know, powered everything down and everything. But within a half hour, there was probably about 6 inches of water on the deck and it was rocking all over the place and would have been a dangerous situation. But those open deck bad situations, we can usually take care of right away because we get notified from the bridge, you know, well before we get bad weather. So we don't really have that many incidents on board, but if we didn't have those kind of fail safes in place, we would. The last minute, you know, torrential rain and people, you know, running around and those kind of issues.
So, there's also some other things. I mean, we're in constant, you know, contact via radio and other things with ship staff and captains. So whenever those types of situations arise, we can react as best we can. Usually after the first day, once they kind of see really what we've got going on, then they get a little more involved and they get excited to be a part of the whole experience. I mean, all the way down to like, on motorboats 2015, we were being followed by a hurricane and we knew that it was going to be bad, but Motorhead was playing that last night and the captain was actually able to level the ship in a certain way to where it was actually more of a flat, we were a little bouncy. The ocean was angry at us and Lemmy was an older guy, you know, and the stage was really rocking. And I don't know what the captain did that day, but I said, whatever you can do, can you keep us level for an hour and a half? And he's like, well, I'll do my best, you know, and hung up the phone. And then everything worked out the way it was. So, I mean, there's just some things that we can't control, but sometimes captains can and ship staff can really help us out.
They put down the training wheels in the back.
Something came out of the sides. And
Hey, guys, I can't even speak right now. I'm going to go to a commercial break here. So bear with me and then we'll get back to this. And about that time, we'll be going live to Facebook. So anyway. Hey, folks, at this time, we would like to remind you that not only are you listening to a kick-ass podcast right now, but we also produce an amazing rock music-themed cruise called Shiprocked. We're actually speaking with two of the gentlemen that make it happen right here, right now. Anyway, we'll be sailing in January 2022 to Costa Maya and Cozumel on what will be our 12th voyage. So please sail away with us, Lamb of God, I Prevail, Ashes to New, Steel Panther, and so, so many more. You can get cabins still at... shiprock.com. Go there. If you can't find one for yourself, then look up our cabin mates and maybe you can hook up with people who already have a cabin or looking for another body in there. So check that out, shiprock.com. With that said, we'll go back to your interview here, which my question is going to be for everyone. Well, not Chad.
Before you guys, okay, we're live. I've got to go. because it's 8:30. I just want to say thank you for the time and the questions, but I will see you guys in a little bit.
Bye, Chad.
See you, buddy.
Bye, Chad.
Good to see you.
Okay, bye.
All right, we'll say goodbye to Chad. We'll say hello to everyone there on Facebook Live. So thank you for joining us tonight. We're here with we're here from Tim and Kyle from Cruise Production Guys. You've probably seen them and or their staff around, most noticeably Jesse. And you'll appreciate these guys. These are the ones that kind of make everything happen. The stages, sounds, lights, everything you guys do, whether we're doing yoga in the morning or we're doing breakfast music or whatever's happening, these guys are making sure it happens. And especially those beat shows that you guys enjoy. So with that said, I've got to ask you guys separately. We talked about what you were doing prior to doing cruise production. What was the first thing, what first concert or show you went to where the production of the show was more important than when you went to go see? For me, myself personally, I think it was around the time I went and saw Pink Floyd, and I was more intrigued by the lighting and everything else than I was so much the music. Was there a moment in your life, your young lives, when that was apparent and you went, oh, this might be what I might do in my life?
Okay, Kyle.
I mean, I wanted to work in music studios and I wanted to make records, and that's how I kind of got into this business. And then kind of the short version of it is that there's not very many studios and there's a lot of people that want to work in them. So I started working in live sound, and then I ended up doing that. And as time went on and more shows and bigger shows, I fell in love with it enough that I wanted to keep doing it. And that's how I ended up meeting Tim. We were in the same field, and we also went to the same college. And I got linked into this, but it was really kind of, I didn't really intend on it at first, but I went to concerts all my life when I was a kid, but I really initially wanted to make records. But the second that I started working in live sound is whenever I just kept down that path.
So Tim, did you have a transcendent moment, or are you just kind of one of those things you decided you kind of segued into?
No, like I said before, my world started, you know, working in the cruise ships and the entertainment department for cruise ships. Mm-hmm. My ultimate goal early on throughout high school and college was to work in radio, you know, be that DJ on the radio. And parents took me on a cruise just before I went off to college, and I fell in love with it. And shortly after that, I started working on them full time. And as I started working for Carnival, which, you know, you guys sail all the time, I worked my way up. And as I was working my way up to the corporate level, the music charter business was starting. Mm-hmm. So we kind of collided together at the same time. And that's how my involvement and my kind of love of production was really love of production and cruising all mixed in one.
Did you guys, when this industry, the cruise and music festival kind of thing joined up, what, over a decade ago, are you guys surprised at its growth? Or did you guys, when you first saw it, you went, yeah, this is something that has sustainable?
Well, it's interesting because realistically, it actually started even further back, probably closer to 20, maybe 22 years ago.
Okay.
To give you an idea of my longevity, I've been cruising now for 31 years. And so I've watched it grow. And it really started, interesting enough, as a corporate level. You know, banks and manufacturing companies, automobile companies, they were using the cruise ships and leasing them out as an incentive. And then once that business started developing, more and more people realized that, hey, we can lease a cruise ship. Then the opportunity to create these style events really opened up, because before you didn't have that, you know, capability to rent a ship for 3 days, 4 days, 7 days, whatever it might be. So once those opportunities for, you know, basically renting out your own cruise ship for the duration, that's when that whole music and cruising came really together.
Got you. Real quick, back to your idea of being you do have a voice for radio.
The face, not so much, but the voice.
No, yes. I wasn't even a guy. I was gonna basically follow up. Yes, you're an attractive man, but I always thought that your voices would be great on radio, especially at drive time. So anyway, there's always that in your back pocket, Tim, if you need
it.
Yes.
That. Yep.
If you finally go, you know what, I'm tired of looking at this fucking water. I think go inside the studio.
After 19 months of not seeing it, I'm going back, no matter
That's
what.
Right. That's very true. Very true. Guys, remember, while you're watching this, please post any questions you have for these two gentlemen. I'm sure you're very intrigued by what they do. It's part of your daily life while you're on Ship Rocks. And just so you guys know what these guys go through, While you're sleeping, they're rigging stuff up. They're setting things up. When you're waking, they're doing the same thing. And when you haven't even been on the cruise yet, they're there for a week doing pre-production for things like Shiprocked and Ship Hop, which we've done before, and obviously Motorboats, which has been was part of our conversation in the first half an hour. And also, guys, check that out this coming Monday, starting at 9 a.m. Eastern. You can check us out at the Ask For YouTube channel or wherever you get your podcast. You can check out the first 30 minutes and hear these guys talk about production and their lives leading up to what they do now. So with that said, is there a show, is there a moment on Shiprock proper that you guys will, is basically the one that's going to sit out for you? Whether it's a show, something happened, a meeting, chance meeting you have, something interesting with production, is there anything that is basically stuck out in your mind? Like, that's my number one memory.
For me, my biggest moment is knowing Alan as long as I have, seeing him create, build, and sail on that very first one. For me, that was the big aha moment. To see him work so hard to get to this point where he could create such an incredible experience, and knowing him and watching him do that, that was the big, for me, the big Shiprocked aha moment.
Yeah, definitely. I think that for us, we've moved from a couple of different lines now with you guys, from Norwegian and to Carnival, and we've basically been able to, Alan's vision is to keep a certain expectation and a certain level of quality with everything. And when we've been moving around and doing different ships, we have to build things differently. Everything is different. Everything is different from when it leaves the truck and goes near the ship all the way up to whenever it gets set up. And then we're doing a show. And I think that just we've achieved a lot together, no matter where we've been. And it's one of the strongest bonds that we have with any of our charters that we do. It's really a unique experience. And I thought this is going to be my seventh one. And each year it's equally, if not better than the previous. And it's always been something that's been pretty amazing to me.
Yeah. To reiterate, Tim, what you're saying is funny, being on those first two cruises when it was a half ship, we were just kind of sharing the ship with other folks, half charter, always amusing to watch the reaction of others that weren't part of it and didn't know what to expect. I'm sure they didn't, you know, I'm sure when, you know, Bert and Rhonda booked their cruise, they didn't realize they were going to be on board with us, chaos that was going on. But you're right, when that first full charter ship hit and that realization, that visualization became a realization, that was a staggering moment. I think they kind of go, wow, the whole fucking ship. It's just an amazing situation.
Yeah, I think that first half ship charter, the best way to come off that was, I think it was like 1,000 ship rockers came on, 1,200 left.
That's right, because they joined, they bought in,
they
right?
They joined, there was 200 after, yep.
Yeah, you know, the thing is, that's always so funny is when you're like, well, you can get some of this admin payment for free just because we have to share this deck, but if you really want to get to the good stuff, you've got to parlay up here and bring you in. Guys, remember, if you have any questions for these two, please post them in the thread below and we will definitely get to those. Now, obviously, we're looking at a brand new world. I hate to use that even that term, but obviously with the protocols are going to play here. Does that change the way you guys go about things other than the necessary, you know, wearing a mask and all that such? How does that play into what you do now?
We've actually been working very closely with the cruise lines since it started. Because we work across every major cruise line, whether Royal, Celebrity, Carnival, Holland, Princess. We work with them all in some way. So we've been fortunate enough to keep in contact with the entire process. Sometimes the processes we've actually helped put input into as far as where it comes to the pandemic and music charters. It is challenging and we don't know how challenging it is yet. You know, I've cruised, Kyle's been at the port. We've both interacted with the systems, both dockside and in sailing. But we don't fully know the impact of what it's going to be once we get there. But all of that impact is really leading up until that sail away. After sail away, the goal is to set sail and leave it behind. So all of our safety protocols and things like that, we actually go another level more with our safety protocols that we have in place just to make sure that we all have the same experience. The guests have an incredible experience. The artists are safe. You know, guests are safe. We're safe. But we really want to draw that line when those ropes are let go and the ship sails. We leave it, literally leave it behind in the dock, and everything else leads up to that point, and then it stops.
Okay. Now, one of the joys of watching you guys operate is when you have to load up a tender and take it off the ship to get to a remote island in order to set up for a show. What gods do you pray to in the morning before you have to do that?
Any and all of them. Any and all of them.
I think our best story is there was five guys that were in a band, and they come from the same city that your hat's from. And, you know, five guys.
Gotcha.
We literally had all the equipment loaded onto a tender going to Half Moon Cay. And we had all their equipment, all of our equipment and everything. And halfway, it's only a, you know, 3/4 mile sail from the, you know, from the ship to the Half Moon. The gentleman from the bridge came down, opened the hatch, jumped in, came out soaking wet, yelled to the captain. And the story we were told is the shaft on the tender boat came out. Water was coming in. So there was only the production team, there was some housekeeping staff, and there was all of the equipment. So we radioed in to another tender. They came up next to us, and nobody would make the decision on how to get the equipment from one side to the other. And as sure as I'm standing here, we took an 8-foot aluminum banquet table between the two tenders, and we hauled every bit of equipment from one tender to the other.
Is this an open water?
Barely made it back to Half Moon and beached itself.
Yeah, this is between the boat, between the carnival ship and the Half Moon landing. Where
folks,
the
if you don't think they earn their pay, yeah, they do. Obviously, one of the fun things we always do have fun about is now become part of lore, and it had nothing to do with cruise production, but we always have a laugh about what happened on the dock when the dock folks there, I believe in Miami, took Andrew WK's case, and it's now sitting at the bottom of the Atlantic.
Oh, we recovered all of that.
Do you guys have the story for that? Because quite honestly, yeah. I was always so much fun. It's like, you know, it's like a game of phone book. By the time it gets to you, you're like, what?
I was the first responder on that mission, let me tell you. And when I got called by Tim that something catastrophic had happened and I needed to go and see what it was downstairs, I'm standing on the dock plate of the ship, which is about 6 feet above the ground. And I look down and there's a luggage cage, which was not used by us. It was used by the stevedores and the porters who pick up people's luggage outside, which was not what we recommend you doing, but you can do. Well, they did that, which is fine. But that cage ended up getting tapped by a forklift, and these cages are on wheels. And the Port of Miami is mostly good, but there's some parts where there is no longer a edge to where the water is, where the ship is. So you could roll right in.
How is there no barrier?
And there's parts where it's been broken over the years or whatnot. So made its way in there. Allegedly. So this forklift driver, at least smart enough as he is, heard it happen, and he jumped and tied it with a strap to his forklift. So whenever I had gotten there and looked down, the thing was totally submerged in the water, but I could see it. It was maybe 1 foot totally under the water. And if it would have gone from there, it would have been gone forever. So we got the items up. We ended up forklifting it out, got the items up. But you're talking about guitars, luggage, things that shouldn't be in water, seawater. Whenever we opened them up, the batteries had already busted and the pickups were already rusting. Mm-hmm. So we got them upstairs. Thankfully, we had, you know, I don't know, 75 other guitars that our company rents and from one of our best vendors. But and they had to kind of deal with that because those guitars didn't work very good anymore. But they were clean as hell, I can tell you. They looked brand new when they came out of that water. We sat them out in the sun, did whatever we could, but I don't think that they ever played them again. But they lost.
Regardless of all the equipment, I think the hardest thing that you guys probably have locating was white jeans.
White jeans, man. we drove all over town looking for, you know, certain medications, replacement clothes, things of that nature, because I think that one of the bags did go.
And how much time did you have in order to secure all these things?
What's that? I'm sorry.
How much time did you have to secure all these things?
Oh, well, I mean, this happened at about 10 a.m. and then we sail at 4:30.
So, regardless of white jeans and guitars, we sail at 4:30.
I needed to be back by 4:30, no matter what.
Hey, I got a real quick question from not really a Shiprocker, but an Aspore employee for you, Kyle. Peggy wants to know what your thoughts are on pigeons.
Oh my God.
You want to give that some context?
I'm not sure that I do. I was given a pigeon as a gift over last week on our ship visit, a brand new pigeon just for me.
Real pigeon. And
in the words of Al, pigeons don't.
Oh my God. I can't even say it.
There's a video out there somewhere that, I'm sure that will surface now that this conversation has happened about me being given a surprise pigeon.
Okay, so there's not any kind of real story to it.
I showed up to the party for dinner, and they had been there most of the day, and there were pigeons all around, and they ended up somehow boxing up this pigeon and said, "Hey, Kyle, we got you a gift," and slid it to me, and I opened it up, and a pigeon flew out of it.
All right, listen, let's go back to your memory banks real quick. Jarna wants to know, and I wasn't aware of this, why did the lights go out at the Nonpoint Theater show? I don't know what year that was. Do you recall?
I don't recall that incident.
Tim?
Do we remember what year that was?
No. Hey, Jarna, if you want to post what year that was, because Nonpoint's been a guest on our boat several times. So let's narrow that in so these guys can get to it.
Chances are, knowing that the ship it was on, it was probably somebody down in the engine room unplugging one thing and plugging in something else. Somebody six decks below us and has no idea there's a concert going on, and just
switch it and then go, "Oh, I wasn't supposed to do that."
It's like the city guy down the steward, he unplugs the wrong thing.
What it is. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yep. Why is this cable running down the hallway? They don't need this. Shut it off, disconnect it, and put it away.
Yeah. Jarna says 2018. So, Jarna, that's probably what it was. It was probably just someone hit the wrong switch. Nothing funner than that. Let me ask you guys, this is a walk the plank question. We'll get to one of those for you. And I always like this question. If you didn't have to consider money, what would you do with your life? Let's do each. Kyle, what would you do with your life if you didn't have to consider money?
Oh, gosh. I don't know. I would definitely still do something with music. I wanted to be in a band whenever I was young. And then I ended up doing this because that was the next
smart,
best thing for
smart
me.
Man. It's just a smart man you are.
Yeah.
Tim, obviously we know that you had hopes to be DJ, which you're still there because you know what? There's no age requirement for that role. But what would you do if money was not an object? What would you do with your life?
I honestly can say without a doubt exactly what I'm doing now.
God, I love that. You know what? I love that idea.
It gives me every opportunity to do everything I want in, you know, my personal life, my professional life. I get to work and meet people I never thought I would ever work or meet. You know, with, and not sure I would even change a thing.
You know, that's such a great answer too, because a lot of times we all do, we ask ourselves, you know, because usually at some point in your life, you're like, I'm doing what I like to be doing. And if I had $5 million rolled to my front door, I'd probably just keep doing what I'm doing, but with a little bit more, you know, swagger.
I'd have a bigger warehouse and some more gear. That's there about it.
I'd have some more shit in my garage. Since you guys work in a business that involves travel, is there a favorite destination you guys have personally, just from your own personal, like, this is beautiful, I've had my best times here, or you can tie it into like a great performance?
I think I know what Tim's is, but I'm going to let him say it.
Well, mine is easy because the very first ship I went on and my very first port of call has actually been my favorite port all these years. And it's Cozumel, Mexico. And as mainstream as it has come and how many stops and, you know, cruise ships go and the growth over all those years, I still have, you know, friendships with people I met all those years ago who still live and work in Cozumel. So for me, just the overall quality of life and relationship would be, for me, Cozumel.
Mm-hmm. You know, that's not a bad answer, because quite honestly, there's nothing funner than getting off the ship, renting a dune buggy and just circling the island. It's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun. You can get into some trouble, but it is a lot of fun. You find those remote beaches. So yeah, I'm with you there. That's a great port. Kyle, how about you, buddy?
I mean, I think that I really like St. Thomas when you first come in and you're surrounded. It looks like you're getting off on Jurassic Park's island. You know what I mean? I think that's always a great, you're surrounded by these hillsides. I always like that aesthetic and that visual, but my favorite would also be Cozumel because of the similar things that Tim said. I mean, it's always been a place where we felt kind of almost like another home for us. And it's nice to have that whenever you've been working your ass off for four straight days for, you know, 20 hour days. And then here's the day that maybe I can make a couple hours to go out and, you know, go see the people that we've met there. And there's always some, it's just such a great place. And it's so small. You can go from one end to the other in minutes. So it's just, it's a perfect little getaway for moments.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny you mentioned the whole St. Thomas. That's one of those brochure pictures they use for the ship, you know, for cruise liners, like pull into lovely, cause the water is beautiful. St. Croix, John's, it doesn't all matter. So you guys obviously have Shiprock coming up. Do you guys have anything prior to Shiprock as far as going? Name, but you can obviously name any cruises you're going. We're not party to it. We want to hear about everything you guys are doing.
Yeah, we actually have three cruises leading up to Shiprock. So for instance, there's you know, sometimes it does happen where we're double stacked, which is, you know, good for the overall company and business. So for instance, while Kyle is with you in Shiprock, I'll be on another cruise simultaneously, just literally passing each other on the ocean.
Yeah, so, that's right. We haven't seen you on Shiprock in a few years. I'm always, you know.
Yeah, and it's trust me, and Kyle knows it's one of my favorites too. If I could go, I would go.
Sure, absolutely.
But it usually lands on another opportunity for us. And with our, you know, with our limited season, we really have to kind of work on every one we possibly can. So we do have three leading up to it, Shiprocked, and then we have five now after Shiprocked. So we've been very fortunate that all of the folks that we work with have been able to bounce back in the industry so quickly.
Mm-hmm. That's fantastic. Let me ask you, so when you guys getting these things where there's conflicting dates and you go, I really want to work that one, but they've been where, you ever get in a coin toss situation, best two or three gets it?
He definitely knows that I like the heavy more than he does. So I think that I kind of got pushed that way, even if I didn't want to in the beginning,
With that said, let me ask Tim, I'm going to go back to your DJ thing, dude. If you were to host a show, you have your own program, Nightly or whatever it might be. What style of music and what kind of station would it be?
Oh, 80s arena rock. Very easy.
Really?
Oh yeah. He's very Boston. Very, very Journey. For sure.
And it's interesting because
the Boston album back there was a giveaway, but yeah.
Behind it. Yeah. Signed.
You mean the autographed one, you mean, by Tom himself? Yeah.
Oh my God.
Well, it's funny because earlier, Chad had asked, you know, what's the favorite, you know, what's your favorite cruise? And my answer always is very straightforward. Mine hasn't happened yet. We've done some events with bands. We've done some, you know, we've done production with Boston and Journey and others like that, but they've never come together as one. And obviously the budget would be, you know, astronomical, but that's always been my go-to, is my favorite one really hasn't happened yet.
Well, you know, we're always in lookout for new ideas. So why don't you just kind of elbow Alan into maybe a nice 80s rock cruise, but not just your typical, like the one-offs. We want the ones that have some stuff.
Well, it's actually all here. I was going to mention it while I can. I just have a few bands. <there. laughs>
That would be actually amazing. And I can totally be on board. That's kind of my age range too, the 70s, 80s. Yeah. But I do like the lineup that we have for this year. It's really our most diverse, our heaviest at some points. And then obviously our most diverse. So that should shake things up a bit. But listen, guys, I've had you for almost an hour here. If there's anything you guys would like to tell us about before we say arrivederci, please, by all means, other than the cruise you got working on. Obviously, Kyle, I'm so sorry what happened last week to the Yankees.
I wasn't going to wear my hat. And then you made some comments today on social media. And I said, never mind. I'm not going
to wear mine. You knew I was going to wear mine just to taunt
and,
you.
And you should. To. You won.
Actually,
man.
You know what? I'm funny because I'm leaving this weekend to go to Boston. And they're playing the first two in Houston. And then I'm staying an extra day so we can go to the Monday night game in Boston.
Great. With my nephew. That's perfect.
So, yeah. Whether we win or lose, I don't care. I just want that experience.
Yeah, it's going to be great.
Yeah.
See, it's so, like Kyle and I get along on every possible platform. Except we know not to pick on Yankees or Red Sox.
It's very
touchy. Are you a Red Sox guy? Are you a Red Sox guy, Tim?
I am born and raised Red Sox fan.
Oh, my God. Beautiful, man. Well, there you go. I feel like there's a two-on-one situation.
It is right now. It is right now. Yeah.
So, anyway, guys, thank you so much, Tim and Kyle from Future Production. Thank you so much for giving us your time. And it's certainly an insight into things that a lot of people, including myself, weren't aware of and give me a better understanding of how things work out. And obviously now that I know, I will definitely pick your brain when I see you. Tim, I don't know when the next time I see you is, buddy, but always safe travels to yourself. Kyle, I will see you actually really soon now. Now that you guys, well, obviously we're going to do, guys, if you're paying attention to this next week, next Thursday, we're going to have a live stream about how the production crews went that Kyle and all the guys from Ask For and the girls from Ask For went on last week. We'll get the skinny on the ports, how the ship was, and probably a little farther along and what Carnival is going to be expecting from us as cruisers. So anyway, gentlemen, thank you so much. Guys, you've been paying attention to this, sir. As you as thank hopefully you. Every week. Please check out, check us out Monday at the 9 a.m. Eastern when this episode will drop. And we couldn't make any of this happen without a few folks. We'll just name them. Chad, unfortunately, had to leave. He had a prior engagement. So thank you, Chad, as always, for the first half an hour and for everything you do for us. And we have our show producer, Alan Koenig.
Even in hell, I get no respect.
Our show engineer, Jennifer Zito. Our show coordinator, Heather Smith. And, of course, the captain, Alan Koenig, which none of this would happen without that gentleman and his vision of what this was to be. So thank you, and thank you, for Trip Rockers, for joining us tonight. And you guys have a great rest of the week. Gentlemen, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bowie, Dylan, Marley, you've heard the names and maybe you've heard their songs, but what about the stories behind the records that made titans of music like these so universally loved and important? Join me, Josh Adam Myers, host of The 500, as each week I go through a different album from Rolling Stone Magazine's 500 Greatest Albums list from 2012 with an incredible lineup of comedians, actors, and musicians talking about how the music has impacted their lives. New episodes of The 500 come out every Wednesday. Listen now wherever you get your podcasts.